So, welcome everybody to tonight's class on the 6 through 10 of Wands, and a special welcome I want to offer to some new people who have joined us. It's really great when new people come in, and I hope you guys have a really great time. Martha is new to class tonight, and Sabrina is new, and Linda was here once, I think, before. And
couple times.
Oh, is it a couple of times?
Yep.
Yes, that is a couple of times. So anyway, welcome to you all, and I hope you have a really great time, and you can ask anything you like as we go along. We do have a fair amount to do, so as usual, we'll try to move along as quickly as possible. Tonight, I want to do a little bit of an experiment.
Well, he said that last week.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Exact words?
You
oh, well,
did.
I'm sorry. I'm beginning to repeat myself. Oh, fish flakes. You know?
No, that's fish flakes. Yep,
so anyway, but what I want to do tonight is something that I normally think doesn't happen very easily. Usually, when you're working with cards, you can either go for a great deal of breadth. You can cover a lot of ground. You can talk about a lot of different things and cover a lot of areas, or you can go deep and take one thing and really work it hard. And depth and breadth usually don't go too well together. I mean, there's usually not enough time in one area to do it. But I'm going to give it a shot tonight. I'm going to see what happens, and we're going to kind of do a little bit of the same kind of thing we did last week, except I want to add another dimension to it. So let's see what happens. So the first thing I want to do is to ask everybody to make sure that you all have your decks and your notebooks and stuff, and the 6 through 10 of Wands.
And I don't. I'll go get it real quick.
Okay, by the way, now I'm hoping that everybody also has a Universal Weight Deck or a Rider Weight Deck, because that's the deck we're going to be talking about tonight.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Okay, go get it, and we'll wait for you for a second.
Hold the cards.
So anyway, so here we are again, and everybody's got their stuff ready, and a question was asked about reversals, and we will try and attend to that tonight. So anyway, what I'd like you to do next is something that many of you already know how to do, and for those of you who don't, I'll describe it. I want you to make an ordered stack of these five cards. And an ordered stack is simply an arrangement of the cards in an order of rank. So what I would like you to do is to put the 6 of Wands on the table face up in front of you. And on top of the 6, put the 7. And on top of the 7, put the 8, etc., until you have them arranged 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, with a 10 face up in front of you when the stack is finished. And when you have all of that arranged, take the entire stack and turn them face down. So now you have a face down stack in front of you. So what we're going to do next is we're going to turn the cards over one at a time. So let me tell you what to do before you actually do it. What we're going to do is you're going to turn over the top card. And when you do, it'll be the 6 of Wands, hopefully, if you did the ordered stack correctly. And you'll look at the 6 of Wands for about a minute. And while you're looking, absorb as much as you can of the image of the card itself. It's a pretty complex image. All the cards are. And I'd like you to examine the cards carefully and remember as many of the details as you can as you look. And as you look, while you're doing that, simultaneous with that, I would like you to write in your notebook what you feel the 6 of Wands is about, what it means, what its references are, what its associations for you are. This would be fairly personal, but almost everybody's personal feelings about these cards are right in line with traditional meanings. So have no fear and go forward and write as much as you can. Use short phrases or single words to describe your sense of the meaning of the card. Stay as close as you can to the central meaning of the card, whatever you feel that might be. Describe it as carefully as you can and as clearly as you can and as concisely as you can. Don't be too wordy. Okay? So begin now and turn over the 6 and observe and write until you hear my voice again. Okay. So put your pens down now for the time being, and we're going to change our order of doing things a little bit. Usually at this point, we'll share among us what our sense of the card is, and between us we'll come up with a very elaborate and extensive set of meanings for the card, which is very useful all around, and we carry that away with us. But before we do that, I want to do something a little different tonight. Let me give you a set of esoteric meanings and associations and attributions, and a little bit of the meaning of the image and the symbolism of the card, which we'll do first. And I want you to make notes on this and add it to what you've already done. So the first thing I want to tell you is that each one of the cards in the deck has an esoteric title, and every card in the deck has an astrological attribution. That includes both majors and minors. There is a system to it, and we haven't really ever gone into the system of attributions, how they arrive at them, but there is a system, and one day perhaps we'll actually deal with that. But for the time being, sort of take my word for it that there is a reason behind all of this and that it works. The esoteric title of the Six of Wands is the Lord of Victory. Isn't that, I say Lord, by the way, because, and there's no ladies here, there's only lords. All the cards are lords, even when there are women in the picture. And maybe that's a little bit of leftover 19th century male chauvinism, but that's the way it is. Called the Lord of Victory. And, of course, the picture shows you something that's very similar to that. The image is actually a picture of the esoteric title and the astrological attribution combined. The astrological attribution is Jupiter in Leo. Very expansive, very showy, very dominant, very happy. Now, if you take that combination of the Lord of Victory and Jupiter in Leo, you'll have a sense of this card immediately. Whether, even if you didn't have the picture in front of you, if I gave you those words, you could probably imagine something. Take those words and add them to the picture, and you should have a pretty good sense of what's going on. Does anybody get the sense that that these words, the title and the astrology, are in any way connected with this image? Can you see it? Or is that something that's just my imagination?
Actually, when you said Lord of Victory, I thought that was incredible, because that's what I interpreted it as, is a victory of some kind.
Good. So in other words, the picture did manage to evoke from you precisely what it was intended to do.
Yes.
Good. Scheherazade, do you have that feeling, or did you not see that when you looked at
it? No, actually, victory was the first thing that came to my mind, but there's one thing about the card, this card that's a little unnerving, and that's the way the horse is caped or cloaked.
Right. There's a bunch of stuff in this, and actually, come to think of it, let's do a little bit of the visual imagery, the symbolism of the visual imagery, because the symbolism of the visual imagery also is meant to express the meaning. It's meant to evoke the meaning. When you look at the card and all of its parts, if there are parts in the card that make you feel uneasy, it's usually intentional. If the card makes you feel good, that's also intentional. And the way in which it makes you feel good or uneasy is precisely what's intended by the card itself. So take a look, for example, at I'll give you the first thing. You know, this is the number six. And the number six in tarot usually implies, by the way, there are lots of systems of numerology, so this is one that applies particularly to tarot. Sixes in tarot involve real accomplishment and the carrying out of a matter, and it usually involves some kind of pleasure, delight, and happiness at accomplishment. It's a good number. It's a number that's a fortunate number in general. That's to all the sixes. And there's an interesting thing about this. It's considered one of the numerologically perfect numbers because its parts, 1, 2, and 3, add up to 6, and the same parts, 1 × 2 × 3, multiply out to 6. It's a very neat, consistent arrangement. And if you notice in the card itself the way the wands are arranged, you notice that the rider has one wand, and at the top of that wand, there is a little cluster of leaves. you know, a little sprouting leaf. And it's the only cluster on that particular wand. And you'll notice that on the left-hand side of the card, there's a little group of two wands. And on the right-hand side of the card, behind the horse's head, there's another group of three wands. So the six is divided into groups of one and two and three, which is meant to reflect a little portion of that numerology that I was mentioning. There's a whole bunch of things about the six, by the way. I don't know if you're even familiar with how many different things there are connected with the six. Let's see. For example, think of the six directions. East and west and north and south and above and below. Those are the six directions of the cube of space. There's the six points of the Star of David, which is also the Seal of Solomon, a very important magical number. It's also the combination of the two triangles, the upward-pointing triangle and the downward-pointing triangle, which together create that same seal, that same star, and involve the mating or the mingling of fire and water, which are the elements that are supposed to be the source of the creation of the universe. So this number six is a very strong and important number. It's also the center of the Tree of Life. It's the sixth Sephira, for those of you who are familiar with the Tree of Life, Tiferet, beauty. So six is a lovely and happy number in tarot. That's the first thing. So it's a lovely and happy card, just because it's a six, for no other reason than that. Then there's this figure on horseback, in general. A figure on horseback, generally speaking, is triumphant. Normally speaking, and that includes cards like Death, which has a figure on a white horse also. There are other cards in tarot that have figures on horseback, and in each case, there is a sense of triumph, of victory, whenever you see that. So this particular figure on horseback is also accompanied by a crowd. There's the sense of his having done something, achieved something, and being applauded for it, and there's a crowd. It's like a king among his subjects, and this is a joint victory. This is not just his victory, but the victory of the whole group. So whenever this card comes up, you will be considering a communal victory, a communal good thing, something that is celebrated not just for one person, but for the whole group, of which perhaps one person is the symbolic leader, but everybody has participated in it. If it's a family thing or a business thing or even a relationship thing, everybody involved has participated in making this happen. There's a wreath. There's two wreaths, actually. There's a wreath on the man's head, and there's a wreath on the wand. And the wreath on the head is a personal wreath. It's a wreath of his personal victory. He's done what he's done, and it's a good thing. And he's being applauded for it, and he's being recognized for it, and it is a victory permanently. That is, it will always be recorded to his name. But the wreath on the wand is tied with a red ribbon, which is fluttering loose. And that loose ribbon gives you the information that this victory is not permanent. There was a time just before this, if you think of what's behind the horse, this man is riding away from something or past something or having been through something. There was a time when this triumph had not yet happened. And ahead of the horse, you notice the horse is looking backwards. There is a sense of the past and also a sense of the future. There is something ahead as well. And there is a time, or there will be a time, when this victory will no longer matter, when it will be a thing of the past. So it's a very temporary thing, and that red ribbon that's loose reminds us that this victory is temporary. The white horse, a white horse in general in tarot, is considered to be a magical creature, a symbol of purity and nobility and a good cause. That's true, by the way, even in the case of Death, which is another whole story. But when you see a white horse in tarot, be aware that those things, purity, nobility, and excellence, are usually involved with a white horse. Then there's the question of the colors of brown and green. Brown and green is a kind of an interesting set of colors for wands, which we discussed last week, I believe, but I want to reiterate that it's something that sometimes, even when I say it, doesn't really make its point. Does anybody here remember why brown and green are connected with wands, which is connected with, usually connected with the element of fire? Why is brown and green so prevalent in the suit of wands? Anybody know?
Because it's organic and it's growth.
Yeah, and what does that have to do with fire?
Well, fire is the inseminator, the spark of life.
That's basically it. You got it. What we're talking about here is life. The fire that we're talking about is not the fire in a candle flame, although that's part of it. What we're talking about here is the fire of life, the life that is in everything that exists. And it shows itself in the form of living things. And the colors brown and green refer constantly to living things. And that's why that's there. You had mentioned, was it Shahrazad, you had talked about the green cape, over the white horse. And what you're looking at there is a symbol of, partially at least, of the unknown. We don't know what's under that cape. We don't know what's carrying this thing forward. There's a lot that is unseen here. There is a lot of ceremony. There's a lot of outward show. There is actual movement. But what is making it happen, the actual karma, the actual reason for things, is unknown even to the victorious rider. And so there's a lot of things going on under the surface and out of sight in this apparent simple victory march.
Would it be possible for the colors also to relate to Hod and Netzach?
To relate to which?
Hod and Netzach.
Well, what you've got, Hod is the color of, is the orange color of Mercury, and Netzach is green. The color of Netzach is green. Why that particular thing would have anything to do with wands in particular, I'm really not sure. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, what I sort of saw when I looked at the picture was that he seemed to be holding a balance between the three wands on one side, which
mm-hmm.
is the Dabina, and the two wands on the other side, which would be Chokmah.
Well,
and that
okay.
perhaps it had to do with maintaining a balance or
mm-hmm.
getting a balance between, because then that would also relate to...
Well, that's an interesting thought. I don't know. I mean, I've never come across that in the literature, but it's certainly a possibility. And I might mention to you guys, if you ever have a sense that there is a meaning in a particular arrangement of things or a particular visual image, and you don't find a reference to it anywhere, nobody mentions it, but it seems like it seems reasonable to you, you can use it as a personal association or attribution. If it's appropriate to use in a reading, for example, feel free to use it. It doesn't have to be in a book to be correct. And the only thing is that when you're working with something like that, remember that it's personal and not necessarily transferable to somebody else. So if you were teaching it to somebody else, you might be a little bit wary of passing on as a teaching something that is a purely personal association. It helps to know the difference, but it is useful to do. Good.
Well, there's something that I'm wondering.
Uh-huh.
If he's holding something in his hand, but it doesn't look like he's leading the horse by the reins.
Right, well, what he's got is, actually, he is holding, he's got a glove on his right hand, and he's got a glove on his left hand as well, and with his left hand, he is holding the reins.
Well, that is the reins.
Yeah, those are the reins.
That green thing with the...
Yep, those are, it's I don't know, yeah, those are reins. I don't know enough about horses to know what the names of everything are, but the bridle, the reins, whatever those are, that's what he's holding,
okay.
Yeah, good. You notice, by the way, that on the bridle, the kind of cloth covering the reins, there are flame shapes, and of course the flame shape is a reference to the element of fire. Good. We have done this one. But now comes the part that's a little different. The part of this whole procedure that I'm hoping will add an interesting additional level to what we're doing. Now that we've done this, I want you to do something else. I'm going to want you to contemplate a question connected with this card. And what I want you to contemplate is a question, and I'll tell you what the question is, and then I'll describe to you what I would like you to do with it. The question that I will want you to ask yourself is, what is the one central meaning of this card, of the Six of Wands? You've already written down a number of things, and they've been suggested to you by what you could see when you looked at the picture. Now, you have an astrological attribution and an esoteric title to add to the whole thing and a little bit of discussion. In the center of this card, the very essence, the core, the heart of the card, there is one intention. And if you can grasp the one intention that's at the heart of the card. You'll always be able to use it in any circumstance that where whenever it comes up, no matter what the question that's asked in the reading, no matter what the meditation you're asked to do, you'll always be able to work with this card if you can grasp its central idea. But you have to find it. And each person will have to look inside themselves to find it. So what I'd like you to do is to close your eyes and breathe and relax. Just relax. And I want you to listen to this question one more time. What is the one central meaning of the Six of Wands? And I want you to pose that question to yourself in your own mind. And I don't want you to think about it. I just want you to listen for an answer. Inside yourself, there's a mechanism. There is a depth from which answers arise that has nothing to do with the surface of your mind or anything you've ever heard or thought of before. So I want you to pose that question to yourself and listen for the answer. Remember what bubbles up. Whatever it is, remember it so that we can write it down and save it for later. But for a minute or two, just contemplate that question and listen for the answer. And do that now. It's time to return. Take two deep breaths. And when you're ready, open your eyes and write down whatever answer came to you to that question. Okay, so let's stop writing at this point, and let's see what we've actually come up with. I want to go around and share a little bit with amongst ourselves what we came up with. And what I would like you all to do is to write down whatever people say in the way of meanings and associations, and especially that central meaning when we get to it. Write down whatever people say that you do not already have written down yourself. You will find what other people say to be very useful. So Scheherazade, let me start with you. Let me ask you, among the things that you wrote down first, when we first did our little list of attributions and associations, what were the three most important things on your little list?
victory, something hidden may not be what it seems, and completion of a task after hard work.
Completion of a, that's very interesting. Okay, what kind of a task do you think might be completed here? Because there's several cards in tarot where there is a completion of a task, and they're represented in different ways. Matter of fact, last time we were working with the Four of Wands, and the Four of Wands was also the completion of something, a celebration of a completion of a task. This, too, is a celebration of the completion of a task, then. Is there a difference?
Well, I think in this one, the task is completed with the work of many people working together. And so it almost seems like, I would think if it were in a reading, it would be more of a business venture or something like that, where people had to group together.
Good. Okay. Now, if when you did your contemplation, did something different come up?
A little different, not a lot. I had trouble getting away from victory. But what did finally come through was that, you know, as we live, we're in constant change, and there's always a state of flux, and that victory is relative, and success is only possible with help from others, and sometimes from unexpected places.
Okay. So the main thing is that victory is somehow qualified. There's more to it than meets the eye. It requires help from others. It's not permanent. It sort of takes away a little bit from the immediacy of the applause and the celebration, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Anne-Marie, what three things on your list of meanings when you first did this are most important?
Different at first. Victory, triumph, and something.
What's the difference between victory and triumph?
I've been trying to answer that question for myself, but I think in a way victory is, I don't really know the answer yet.
Okay.
But I think to the extent that I do know it, I think that victory is the sense of winning something, and triumph is kind of the feeling of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's more to it than that, and it's something I have to learn about.
Okay. What did your contemplation yield you? Did it yield you anything different than those?
In a way, at first I felt afraid, and partly afraid that I wouldn't get it. And then I sort of told myself, well, you'll get what you can get right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wrote down was a triumphant success on the way to something greater.
So this is simply a stepping stone, a good stepping stone, but a stepping stone.
Yeah, but it is a stepping stone, but I wouldn't say simply a stepping stone because there's something really important in it, although the specifics of it won't be important later, but what was learned from it will be.
Okay.
And
so
there was something I didn't write down that was included in that, of something having something dying in order for something else to flourish.
Hmm. That's interesting. If you were try and give me, I'm going to ask you the question again. Instead of asking you what your contemplation yielded you, I'm going to ask you now to tell me what, in your opinion, what in your experience so far this evening is the central core meaning of this card? The core, the heart, trimmed of all the fat.
If I just look at it right now, I see elation over a recent success.
Good. So it's an elation over something recent.
Yeah.
Of a recent event. Okay, good. So it's an elation, and it's recent, and probably, and I'm assuming temporary.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that because this is actually it begins to get just a mite fuzzy around the edges, which is actually quite lovely. Good. Kelly, what were your three most important items on your list?
Celebrating a new plateau.
Speak up a little bit.
Celebrating a new plateau.
A new plateau, okay.
Yeah. Pride and accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Recognition, peer validation.
So validation, pride, and accomplishment, all three. Very interesting stuff. And considering that we were... Now, this was what you came up with before we discussed stuff. Now, afterward, when we've gone through everything and you did your contemplation, what did your contemplation yield you as the central core meaning?
Acknowledge and move on.
Acknowledge and move on. How interesting. Okay. So, still, from all three of you, so far who have spoken, I've gotten the sense that that there's movement here. This is not a static situation, which is a very good thing to know. Good. Let me see. Jaina, give me...
What I had that hasn't already been said was, excuse me, many supporters, physical bounty, ego feeling.
Many supporters. Give me the rest of it.
Physical bounty.
Physical bounty. Good.
Ego/feeling.
Ego/feeling. Where is the ego involved in this?
You know, whenever you use this card, I do think that that as he rides through, you know, with that victory, that's one of those things that in reverse you kind of have to be careful that you don't allow your ego to take over and make yourself think that you're greater than reality.
Uh-huh. You know that you probably have all heard that in olden days, in Roman times, when a general was victorious in a campaign, usually a campaign that the Romans did was a pretty big deal and involved a lot of territory and conquering of empires and stuff. So when the general came back to Rome, they did a triumph for him, and it was a parade. And in the parade, the victorious general would ride in front of all the treasure that he had captured and all the slaves he had captured and all, and, you know, and the conquered king that would be dragged in chains after him and all that kind of thing. So here he was riding at the head of this huge procession after having this enormous victory. And there would be usually a man that would run alongside him on foot and shout to him periodically, "Don't forget you're mortal. Don't forget you're mortal." Because it would be you tend to forget that.
Right.
That's exactly good. Now, is there any difference between what you came up with on your own when you were thinking about it and what you saw as the central meaning of the card when you contemplated it?
It was a different twist, because we've talked about how the victory can affect the ego, but when I contemplated it, I came up with ego-driven accomplishment.
Aha. Uh-huh. Really
is
interesting.
That was a different twist.
That is a different twist, an ego-driven accomplishment. I'm going to save that. In that one statement, there's a whole range of possibilities, and it just opens up a door, and if I walk through that door, we'll never get to another card. Okay, good. Peggy.
I had success, control
mm-hmm.
over a variety of actions, emotions, and maintaining a dynamic balance.
Maintaining a dynamic balance. So presumably there's some effort required there.
Yeah.
Which would mean that if you didn't put in the effort, you might not maintain the balance.
Correct.
And what would happen then?
Then imbalance.
So in other words, a person, even in victory, has to exert effort.
Right.
In order not to get thrown off balance and lose whatever he's attained.
Right. Because it's not a static card.
Yeah.
It's a card of action.
Good. And what core meaning did your contemplation yield you?
I got a sentence. Hail the conquering hero. And I thought of Julius Caesar, who was conquering, was stabbed in the back by Brutus.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also got the sentence, fame is
once again, the temporariness of this victory and the fact of washing your back. In fact, I believe the last time we taught this in live classes in New York, somebody mentioned the business of washing your back, which is kind of an interesting thing here. Of course, the horse is doing just that, no?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Good. Excellent. So the fleetingness of this victory, the fleetingness of this applause is a major consideration and has been, I think, throughout for everybody. Ruth Ann is pointing to the clock and letting me know the time is passing. Good. Marcy.
I'm all over the place here, but for me it's about using balance and harmony. Let me begin. The successful completion by balancing and harmonizing your goals and receiving the recognition here. The by balancing your intent and will that you finally are able to have the recognition and the sense of accomplishment for a job well done.
So without balance, what happens?
Without balance, you can end up, again, scattering all that dynamic energy, taking all the passion and being all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this was cultivating and focusing, being able to take that drive and the will and being able to harmonize those components
mm-hmm.
for the manifestation of your dream and
good.
The realization of the goal of a job well done and the recognition that your colleagues, and this reminds me so much of what's going on tonight, that spiritually, that this is, for me, it speaks of, wow, you're doing great here. You're recognition from all of this work that we're doing on the classes.
Okay, you know what I want you to do? This is what you brought up now is extremely interesting. I would like everybody to look through their decks quickly and find the Five of Wands.
Got it.
Yeah, let me know as you get it, say got it.
Got it.
Okay, what I would like, if anybody doesn't have it, just keep looking until you find it. And then what I want you to do is to put the Five of Wands to the left of the Six of Wands. Just touching it, you know, just kind of one right next to the other. And look at what happens when you move from the Five to the Six. This is a little secret that I'm going to tell you now, and it's a secret that if you use it, it will give you huge benefits. It's a difficult secret to use because it takes effort. But if you use it, it'll be great. Between any two cards that are numerically next to each other in tarot, there is a bridge that covers a space. Two cards are linked by a connection. And the space between the cards contains a story. And the story that is contained in the space between the cards is greater than the story that's told by the cards themselves. Look at those two cards and realize both of those cards are in you. They're energies that are contained within you, as all the energies in the deck are contained within you. And realize that there is a state in you that could be described as the Five of Wands. And there is a state in you that could be described as the Six of Wands. And there is a condition where you travel. You make the journey from the Five to the Six. And each person makes that journey in a different way. And if we had the time, I would ask you to contemplate the journey from the Five to the Six, and you'd find the most interesting things there. But let's leave that aside. Keep the Five where it is. I mean, keep the Five out somewhere. Just turn it face down so you're not looking at it for the moment. We'll use it again later. Cool. Linda?
Okay, well, I have obviously victory. Acknowledgement. Standing tall in the saddle.
Excellent. Now, acknowledgement is a big deal. How victorious would you feel if you accomplished something that was truly victorious, but you were not acknowledged?
That's true.
Would you feel victorious if there were no acknowledgement?
No.
Okay. How many of you, in general, regard acknowledgement as part of victory? Nobody?
Yeah. It's
a
validation of it.
Well, it is a validation of it, but what I'm getting at is this. Have you ever been in a situation where you have been victorious but nobody noticed?
Yes.
But you still regarded yourself as victorious?
Mm-hmm. Of course, because you don't always have to have validation to know you've done the right thing.
So what does validation add to the process?
Just kind of boosts your ego.
Does it do anything else? One of the things that it does is it establishes community. It's a way when something is validated by you. Well, validation always means there's a group. There's somebody other than you to recognize it. So it's a mirror in which you can see what's happened. And usually, a community validates in such a way that it legitimizes a victory that is validated by the community in which it takes place. It's legitimized. It's something that you can stand on, refer to, and have generally accepted, and there's something, I don't know how to describe it. It's like the difference between living together and being married. I mean, a marriage is a validation by the community of a relationship. Everybody in the entire world knows your relationship and accepts it, and the courts accept it, and the country accepts it, and your community accepts it, and your religion accepts it, and God knows how many other ways in which a marriage validates a relationship. Well, a victory also is validated that way by the community in which it takes place. And there's something really, really deeply satisfying about being validated by your peers. So this has those two parts to it. The victory is one part, the validation is a second part, and they're really connected, though they're not the same thing. Good for you. I'm going to go more quickly now because we've used up an awful lot of time on one card. Martha, tell me what you came up with in all of this.
Okay. I saw it as an expectation of victory and or triumph. I really don't see the Six of Wands. I don't see them openly celebrating. I see them more like expecting to be victorious.
So they're marching towards victory, not celebrating one that's in the past.
Right. There's an expectation of
that's
victory.
Cool. Good. Okay.
And then when I did the contemplation, I saw this image of bubbles rising to the surface, and then they were settling. So it was like a transient, it's like there's a victory, but it's temporary.
So it's like an effervescence.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I love that image. Good for you. Sabrina?
The three things that came up for me were victory, pride, and I just read the card that they're returning from. Something.
They're returning. Then the interesting thing is now Martha saw it as going towards something, and you're seeing it as returning from something that is something that's already been done.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of you, by the way, are correct. There is something in the past. There is something in the future. In the past of this card was the Five of Wands. In the future of this card, you will see in a moment, is the Seven of Wands. When you take a look at that, you'll get a sense of what the Six of Wands is about more clearly. So what I want you to do now, and I thank you all for that, that's an extremely interesting combination of things, and I think that this card really kind of got, everybody kind of got the sense of this card very clearly and well, and by the time we had gone two or three people down, we had the sense of it firmly in mind, and everybody else simply, again, validated it. So from that point of view, this is a victory for the group of us, having looked at this card and understood it fairly completely. We're going to, actually, what we should do at this point is to give a fairly quick glance at what would happen if the card came up in a reading. Now let's say, for example, that you had just had a fight with your brother or sister. And, oh no, never mind that. Let's put it this way, not you. Oh yeah, you could be doing a reading for yourself. And you just didn't know how it was going to end. I mean, it wasn't finished yet. I mean, you're still feeling kind of shitty over it. And, you know, and you had this fight, nothing was really quite settled yet. And you wanted to know whether it was ever going to resolve itself. And the Six of Wands came up. Shahrazad, what would that tell you about this thing between you?
Okay, that what we were fighting about isn't really that important, and it's just an obstacle that needs to be overcome, and that we are going to be able to overcome it and move forward.
So you're basically figuring that this will have a... Would you say that it basically, that you figure it'll have a happy outcome?
Yes.
There won't be any problems with it?
No.
Not in the end?
No.
So Anne-Marie, if this card were reversed under those circumstances, what would you say?
I would say it looks like a lot of strife and discord for the near future.
Yeah.
At least for the near future.
So there's a certain amount of rancor. There's a little bit of poison in it.
Maybe even a lot.
Uh-huh. Sabrina, would you agree with that as far as the...
It came up reversed?
Yeah, if it came up reversed and you'd had this argument, it hadn't been resolved yet, and you just wanted to know how it was going to turn out in the end, and this card came up reversed as the answer to your question, how would you feel about that?
I think there was a lot more work that had to be done to accomplish a balance.
Good. That's basically the thing, because remember that all the Wands cards are energy cards. Every one of them bears the stamp of the expenditure of energy. So if this card came up upside down, in order to get out of this in one piece, in order for both of you as a group to come out of this all right, if the card were reversed, it would obviously require a good deal of work. The same kind of thing would be true if you were facing an argument with your boss, or if you were facing difficulties with anybody or any group, and this card came up either upright or reversed, you would know that if it came up upright, basically you would all come through it okay. And if it didn't, if it came up reversed, the chances are you have to do a lot of work and slog through some pretty tough feelings to get past it. Then there's things, just simple things, like for example, let's say that you were in school. Marcy, let's say that you were going to school and you had just taken a test.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to a reader to find out how the test was going to come out. How were you going to do? And the card came up reversed.
I would say that I probably, if I passed, it was barely.
Uh-huh.
But not to give up that you can try again. However, I don't think the results would be positive for that particular test.
Okay. So, Peggy, if this card came up reversed for you in a situation like that, you had a test to pass, and the card came up as the answer, and it were reversed, what would it tell you?
I would basically focus on that this is a temporary card, that
mm-hmm.
things are turned around.
Okay, so...
But if I had already taken the test, then, well, back to the books.
Back to the books. Good.
Had I not taken the test yet, then it would just tell me I'd really have to burn the midnight oil.
Sounds good. Linda, and what's your feeling about this upright?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Here's the test has been taken. You're waiting for results, but you're really curious to know how it's going to turn out. You consult a reader, and this card comes up.
I think it's victorious. I don't think there's any way you look at it that you can get. You know,
good. Yeah, it's pretty clear that things would be looking good. That your test would be passed with flying colors, and that's the basis of this thing. That works out very simply. It's an easy card to read. This is one of the easier ones to understand. Good. So with that done, let's turn over. Turn this card face down and turn the next card face up, which is the Seven of Wands. And we're going to do this more quickly. What I want you to do now is to again look at the card, observe its aspects, take into account everything that you can that's particularly interesting about the imagery, and write as you go what you feel this card is about. We'll just take 30 seconds to do that. Okay. Now I'm going to give you the esoteric title, the astrological attribution, and some of the meanings of the visual imagery of the card, and add that to the things that you've observed. The esoteric title of this card is the Lord of Valor. Valor meaning courage. And the astrological attribution of this card is Mars in Leo. Before we had Jupiter in Leo, now we have a more contractive and more intense form in the form of Mars. Mars in Leo. And of course, the first issue of symbolism here is the number, which is seven. And generally speaking, in seven, the sevens usually indicate that whatever's going to happen depends entirely on what you do. This is not one of those things that's forecast, where, you know, this is going to happen because, you know, it's not graved in stone. This is specifically based on the actions that you take. So the more courageous, the more energetic, the harder you work and fight, the better the outcome will be for you. So the first thing that you'll notice is with the imagery here, the central figure basically gives you the idea of opposition. I mean, he's fighting something. We don't know exactly what. And there's a possible victory and a possible defeat. You really don't know how it's going to turn out. All you see is the actual act of opposition. There's some courage involved. He's fighting odds. Now, there's possible defeat, possible victory in that. We really don't know. But we do see somebody fighting against odds. There's a cliff. And the cliff is basically hiding the opposition from us. And cliffs usually indicate high ground. There's at least the feeling on the part of the protagonist in this card of holding the high ground, either the moral high ground or possibly simply having the advantage in some way in whatever struggle that he is waging. And there's also the sense of fighting for a good cause. That's part of the issue of being on a cliff, on high ground. Now, there's a river. The river is a natural boundary between things, and it has there is the sense of a person trying to reconcile two positions. A lot of times the card will, that river, this particular card and that river will give you the sense that a person has two issues that they're holding on to simultaneously. It might possibly be that there are issues involved with people being in two places, as, for example, often happens when a person has family in another country. Or any place where there are two things going on at the same time and there is the need to reconcile and manage two difficult positions simultaneously. Sort of like having one foot on the back of one horse and one foot on the back of the other horse and trying to ride them both in the same direction. It's a tricky business. And you'll notice that he has one shoe and one boot. Another indication that he has on the footwear, he's grounded in a way that's appropriate to the two sides of the river. He wears a shoe for one side and a boot for the other, because different things are required in those two in the two situations. Those are the main qualities, and of course, you still have the business of the brown and the brown and green combinations of colors. You notice also, by the way, one thing I didn't mention in the previous figure is that this guy is not wearing a belt. A belt usually indicates a clear understanding of the difference between higher and lower considerations. When there is no belt, there's a simple unity of feeling. The entire passion of this person goes in one direction. He has no sense of higher and lower here. He's completely invested in whatever it is he's doing. So the battle is to the death, or the battle at least is to the end. There is no sense of restraint, no sense that a portion of him can stand back from the battle and just watch. Now, based on the things that you've already written, and those few ideas from the imagery and from the astrology and stuff, what I'd like you to do is to close your eyes . Visualize this card in your mind. See it clearly. And contemplate the question, what is the central meaning of this card? If it means one thing, what does that one meaning? Do that now. There is a phone obviously going on. There's something, if you could possibly deal with that, that would be great. That sound is going on, it would be very useful if it could be prevented. Good. Take two deep breaths. And when your breathing is returned to normal, open your eyes and write down the result of your contemplation. Good. What I want you to do now, we're going to share again, and this time I want to keep the discussion to the central issue of the card. There will be other things, and as we talk, you can weave them in if you wish, but I want to find out what each of you feels is the main purpose of this card. What's it about? Sabrina, what is the core issue in this card as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, what I got initially was that this person's maybe completely off, but this person's accomplished a lot and he's really concentrating on achieving this one goal. But however, where he's standing at, he needs to watch his step.
So in other words, we're now back in the situation of being in perilous. I mean, he's trying even harder now. He's going for even more things, but it's gotten tricky.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, good. The trickiness of this situation is a particularly important one. Good. Martha, what's your sense of the central meaning of this card?
Well,
Well, I saw a sword cutting through the water, like emerging through the water, with like a lot of might and force and energy. So it's like, you know, I could see the effort, the focus of that this person is putting into this whatever it is that I would.
Whatever battle he's fighting, he's really focused on it. But the interesting thing is, of course, if a sword is coming up through the water, presumably it's pointing right at a vulnerable place in him. So that would make it very tricky for him, would it not? And focus would certainly be in order.
No, because in my contemplation, you asked me what is the meaning. I ask myself that, and that's the image that I get.
Ah, you're right. Absolutely.
And then
good.
I have to ask the image, what do you mean?
And the image said. Say it again.
It's about the force. It's about the energy. It's about the focus. It's
so it's very explosive. That's actually. So your sense is that it's very, very intense.
Yes.
Good. And the intensity of this thing can be so extreme. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. I shouldn't put words in your mouth. Sorry about that.
No, it is. That's the way it feels. Very intense. Very extreme. You know, it's like just imagine a sword, just you know, emerging. At a great speed, just emerging from the water.
Have you personally ever experienced an intensity and focus of that kind in trying to get something done or dealing with a difficulty?
I suppose.
Well, you would know it, I would imagine.
Huh?
You would, if you had ever felt that, you would probably know it because it's probably a peak experience. You know, because I would imagine in if it were in my life and I had experienced such an extreme power of focus, concentration, and energy, I would certainly remember it. So if you think maybe, then it probably hasn't happened to you.
Well, I guess I wasn't analyzing so much my image as to just, you know, I was just taking the image.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great image. Linda?
Okay, well, I see this as real strength of conviction. The total belief in oneself and willing to stand up for yourself, whether it's in your beliefs or your ideas or the way you want to live your life or just the creation, and just be willing to fight for it no matter what anybody else says.
Would you say that a sense of justification is in this? That he really feels completely justified in whatever it is that he's doing? No doubt here.
I feel that.
Absolutely. So this is a figure that not only has the intensity that Martha was talking about, but also has a complete belief in his own cause.
I feel that.
Good. Marcy?
Using his mind, his body, and his spirit, because the yellow for me is he's analyzing everything, and you can see the body, he's at work, he's working very hard, he's using his passion, his spirit, and through his hard work and his endeavors, he is victorious. He will be victorious. He's standing on higher ground.
Victorious over who? Over what?
Over what? Whatever he is trying to manifest in the outer world through his passion, to be able to finally receive or to create something tangible of his ideas.
If he were to be victorious in this matter, is there anybody to validate his victory?
Well, with the seven, he is his own worst enemy. He doesn't have that validation yet, but if he believes that he is victorious, then he will be. Whatever you believe, you become.
That's interesting because that is one of the definitions of insanity. If a person believes something absolutely firmly and completely dedicates himself to the pursuit of that belief, and yet he has no validation and no consensus, there's nobody else around who understands what it is that he's fighting or understands what it is that he's doing, and yet he's doing it. That is one of the definitions of a paranoid.
Well, I believe that...
He's fighting something that nobody else can see or understand.
Well, the seven tends to be the thinker, and he does think too much. That's about, for me, the number of trusting, to trust your intuition rather than the imperfect mind.
Okay, good. Just bear that in mind. That's really interesting. Okay, Peggy?
Well, I guess you just made a comment on the person I was thinking about.
Uh-huh.
I saw Ralph Nader standing there saying, I'm fighting for a just cause.
No, but Ralph Nader has people who believe in him.
But I don't think he needed them. I think an idealist doesn't, in many cases, doesn't need validation or doesn't respond to it.
In fact, many times idealists almost thrive on nobody believing them.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that there is a sense of idealism here.
Yes.
Really interesting. Kelly.
Micro-meaning was, if it's worth believing, it's worth fighting for. Not so different.
And if you don't...